Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thanks for the introduction. So indeed, I'm going to speak about the undo monad in Sleep Show, many words that maybe you don't know. And so, but I will not explain all the words now, but I will try to first make a good overview of what the talk will be in terms of organization. So we will have three parts. The first part will be speaking about the context. And the context here will be just a concrete problem that I will want to solve that I had in my real life. And then I will present something that will not have anything to do at first with the context, which is a technique, a tool, so monads, but presented as a technique or design pattern to solve problems. And at the end, I will be able to combine both into like take the original problem and the technique that I presented and use the technique to solve the problem. So let's start with undoing the context. So what is the context? It is a sleep show. Do you want to know what it is? Sleep show is everywhere. It is all around us, even now in this very room. You can see it when you look at the screen and where you turn on the video recording. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to conferences, or when you prepare your talk. But PowerPoints have been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. That you can do better. You were born into slides, born inside a prison that you cannot hack, modify, or extend. A prison for your presentation. Unfortunately, no one can be told what Sleep Show is. You have to see it for yourself. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. Take the blue pill. The presentation ends and you can exit the room and go back to Google Slides. Take the red pill, and you can stay in a monad land and go down the rabbit hole. OK. Oh, thank you. good. So I can show you what is a sleep show. It is actually just a presentation tool. It's the presentation tool that I'm using now, so that why it's everywhere when you look at the screen. And to be more precise, because it's a presentation tool that is made in a specific way, it is a compiler that compiles source as input and have some HTML presentation as output. So an HTML file that's self-contained and that render as a presentation. So it's a compiler. What is the source? You have several important things in the source. So it's a markdown base, but there are extensions, which I call actions. Here we have pause and env, but as you can see, there are many more. And those actions will be ordered by the compiler in the reading order. So pause at presentation time is an action that should be executed before emphasize. And then at presentation time, we want to execute the actions. So they will be executed in order, and let's see the example in here. So we have pause. What does the pause action? It hides what comes after, again in reading order. And when it is executed, it displays it back. So here we have surprise that just arrived when I executed the action. The actions are executed each time I press the button. Then we have the second action, which is called the next time I press the button. And this one is an action that has a target, the word it is attached to. It could be somewhere else, but here it is the word that's attached to. And so surprise, when you execute the action, with just emphasized, which is good. Sleep Show, I said it's a compiler, but it's not only a compiler, it's also an engine. And it's important to see that there are things that happen at compile time, but the execution of the actions happens at not really runtime, with, I say, presentation time. Okay, and now I have all the tools to frame the problem, which is how to go back. Because I have missed something, someone asked a question, and I need to go back in time. So I'm just going to do a demo first to show you that because I'm using SleepShow, I can do that, just a demo. Let's go back. Hello, everyone. Thanks for the introduction. Let's go back more quickly. I think like this, we were here. Okay, good. So the demo worked. I could go back. So just to make sure, we are on the engine here. It's a problem in the engine of undoing the actions. And one last thing I want to say is that action can be complicated. I also have an exec action that executes a script given by the user, so I can do more complex things, and you can execute multiple actions at the same time. So it's not just very simple actions. So the problem is actually difficult. So let's see first one solution, which is quite popular in functional programming and front-end interfaces and things like that. So we have a value that corresponds to the state. So it's an actual value that you, like a record of all the things, such as what is visible, as we saw, pose, hide something, what the coordinate of the sliding window, what is drawn on screen, and things like that. And then because this is just a value, we also have the screen where we want to display the things. And we will have a function that we will call renderState that takes the value and put the thing, like make the screen synced to the value of the state. And we also will have a diff to be able not to replace everything each time between either the old state, new state, or the old VDOM and the new VDOM, things like that. I think you might be familiar with those ideas. So when we go next, we just have a next function that takes a state and returns a new state, in this case, by calling an action. And once we have the new state, we can, because we want to be able to go back, the solution will be to keep the old states. So we will have a stack of old states, and we will put the old state in it, replace the current state with the one that we just computed, and then call the render state, which calls diffs and shows the things on the screen. We can do that a second time if we go to S2 by calling next of S1 this time, replace S1 with S2 in the current state, put S1 in the stack, and call render state to have it rendered. And that is great because now, because we kept track of the old state in the stack, we can just undo, pop the stack and get the old state. Great, let's do it. We forget about S2, take S1 from the stack and call render state to have the new rendering. And again, we pop S0, forget about S1 and render the screen. So that's great. I think I have concluded my presentations maybe slightly too early. This is the solution that everyone tells me to use, and because I think it's popular, but in my specific case, I think it is not suited to that, as you can see. So why is it not suited for me? What is the problem with it? So there are several. Sorry, it's a bit low. I know people cannot really see the bottom of the screen. So the problem one is that the state coexists with an implicit state. So we have an explicit state S0 here. We also have the state of the screen. And this is at the same time good because you have no hidden state. But at the same time, the user can provide scripts. And this makes the interplay between the implicit state and the explicit state not that nice. But another maybe bigger problem is that actions are defined as transitions and we are modeling our thing as a state. And we can see that there is like a smell of a problem in the fact that you have a pose, for instance, which is a transition. So to go from one state to the next one, the action, we compute a new state and then make a diff between the previous state and the new state. So we are just taking back the pose action from the two states, and it seems an unnecessary intermediate representation. Problem three is that state transition take time. may take time. For instance, when I'm drawing, it takes some time. When I'm moving the screen, it may take some time. And this is not easy to encode in a state, which is like a current static situation. And yeah. So problem four is that is again about state transitions, is that we may have different requirements for different directions. For instance, when I go from S0 to S1, I might want to go in a different time than when I go from S2 to S1. And if we look at the four problems that I mentioned, they are all linked with the fact that we are focusing on states when all our actions provided by the user is transitions. So what we are going to do is to go back to the drawing board and like make some space and focus instead of on transition, instead of focusing on states. So let's do that. We have our now implicit state, ambient, not explicit state, which in this case can be like assumed is just the screen. And we, because we want to focus on transition and we have a forward and backward transition, we might think we want two functions, one to go forward and one to go backward. And so in this case, maybe actions also need a function to go forward and a function to go backward. And then going next is just taking the action, the current action, and calling it its forward version, which directly has a side effect on the implicit state. We call the second forward function, and when we want to go back, we just take the last actions and call their backward version this time. Okay, so this like is close to work, but yes, so as a conclusion, we have one function per direction. It's close to work, but we have two problems. The first problem is that everything is duplicated. So when you define pose, you have to define pose forward and pose backward, and maybe leave traces so that backward can operate. So the defining action becomes much more complicated. And the second problem is that everything is duplicated. So when you define actions, you have to do it twice, and etc. Okay, so we are not really there. And we can go back to the drawing board, make some space. And this time, still focus on transitions, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we are going to do something else. Instead of having two versions, we will have only one forward version, but the forward version will return the backward version. So it will be like a value returned by the function. So next can do that. It will have an undo stack. There will be an undo stack. And next we'll call the action, which will generate a way to undo its side effects. So this has made some effects on the screen, but you have a function to undo those side effects. And when you call the next action, it generates another undo function that you put on the stack. And this way, it's easier because you will generate the backward function on the fly, and you don't have to leave traces. You can put those traces in some way in the closure that of the function you are generating. When we go back, we pop the stack. And so that makes it, you just call the function on the top of the stack and then remove it from the stack. And if you want to go back again, you do that again. So you call undo and then remove it from the stack. Okay, so that seems to work. There is no problem. But there is a challenge, which is how to return your undo in an ergonomic way. Because I said pose and umph return the undo function, but we still want it to be easy to program actions. I don't want to have a complicated logic or logic that is complicated by the fact that I have to return these undo functions. And this is what we are going to focus on, how to return an undo function. And for that, we need tools. And so I missed the opportunity to use the BobConf logo here, but you can think it's a BobConf logo. So we want a function to return a way to undo their side effects. We want a tool to help us do that. And we heard that monads have something to do with side effects. So we are going to go look at what monads are and what can they offer. And maybe they can help us to solve our problem. So let's go. Monads, this you don't need to understand that right away, are a design pattern to represent computation as expressions. Maybe you already understand, maybe you already know. But to understand that, I will make a small discussion on statement-based versus expression-based languages. So we have languages, programming languages have different paradigms. And some are more statement-based, some more expression-based. And for instance, Assembler, which is closest to the machine, is more statement-based. It, the AST just looks like a list of instructions, so you don't have expression. Expression are things like 3n plus 1. And here, when you compute 3n plus 1, you have to do two expressions, n equals n times 3 and n equals n plus 1, because you only have like low-level statements that, such that multiply by 3 and put that in a register. But the advantage is the order of execution is very well defined. It's very well defined. It looks like it's linear, but actually the next state depends on the previous one. So it's slightly not exactly linear, but at least very well defined. We have imperative language that goes closer to expression based, where you have both statements and expressions. Statements are the things like do that, so they speak about the execution order, and you execute them. You assign x to this value, things like that. And expression, they are more tree-like. They are things like 3x plus 1, or x divided by 2, x mod 2 is 0. This is a Boolean. And we don't speak about executing them, we speak about evaluating them. They are tree-like here, and you, as you can see, it's not clear whether you start here by evaluating the right-hand thing 1 or the left-hand 3 times x. There is nothing that says why we should do one or the other. So the evaluation order isn't clear. Fortunately, when you evaluate the expression, you are not making any side effects, so the order of evaluation doesn't matter. Are we really sure about this? If in expressions, I can have function calls, so with log, which is just returning its input but logging it, and with log is an expression, but calling a function triggers the execution of statements which can contain side effects. And in this case, because the evaluation order isn't clear, it's not clear what will happen. In this case, only the left one will be evaluated, so we'll have only one log. But if we just do mostly the same thing, but replacing the normal OR with a function that returns OR, then suddenly both are evaluated. So having side effects in expressions is not very nice. Finally, we have functional languages which do not have statements, only expressions. As you can see, Syracuse here takes something that would be a statement in another language. Or at least in JavaScript, there are two different if, one at the statement level and one at the expression level. So do we have the same problem about side effects? Yes, because we need side effects to make some interesting things, and if you only have expression, you need to put them into expression. We have several ways to solve this. One is to define the evaluation order. So we will say on those IST node, it will go first evaluate this, then evaluate this. And maybe in some other where it's less clear, you can just leave it undefined. But there is another approach, which I think is used in Haskell, which is to only have pure expressions. This way, so pure expression are expression without side effect, no more problem, but wait, how do you do the first program for everything, which is to do a hello world, if you don't have side effects? So how to do that? The way to do that, so we have expressions, and we will use expressions to represent computation. So in some way, we will have a DSL that represents an assembler language in some way, or really computations. And then in Haskell, your main function does not return nothing or an integer. It returns an expression that represents a computation, and then this expression is executed. So to make it very low on the screen, you have your program, which is an expression. It is a pure expression, so you can evaluate in any order that doesn't matter. And it returns an it evaluates to an expression, but this expression represents a computation. And at the end of the evaluation, the runtime will execute the returned or evaluated computation, and which will trigger side effects. Okay, so just a recap. We had a program Haskell without side effect, and we were able to encode side effect, to put side effect in it at the value level. And the same trick can be used to other things. For instance, you have a language without exception, and you can represent computation with exceptions and then have a way to evaluate it, to run it. So you can somehow add exception in a language without exception or add asynchronous programming in a language that is synchronous, which is cool. And all those extensions, they follow the same pattern, which is the Monad design pattern. Which is what I'm going to speak about now. So how to represent computation now that we know that we can represent computation at the value level to add some features that the host language does not really have. So I'm going to use OCaml starting now because I will write code for all the reasons Xavier mentioned. We need a type to represent computation, and this type is parameterized. So it's a computation that returns something at the end of the computation, for instance. And so it's parameterized by alpha. We also need some atomic computations. So the base things that you can do in the computation, for instance, readline or printline. So readline, it is a string computation. So it's a computation that asks the user to write a line and return the screen at the end of the computation. And printline, it returns unit, which is nothing, but takes a string. You also have return, which is just returning the value that has been given to you. There is always this interplay between the value in the host language and the computation language will use the values from the host language. And then now you have atomic computation, you also need to chain computation. So this is a pseudocode. Chaining computation is first do something, get the result, and from the result, do something else. And we are going to name this function bind. You have the pseudocode at the top and the signature here. Let's just sanity check that we have everything. So bind represents the semicolon that chain computation. And it takes a first computation that you can do. And it takes a second computation, but that depends on the result of the first computation. So the second argument to bind is a function that takes the result of the first computation and produces a new computation. And at the end, you get the chained computation here. Also, another thing is being able to run computation. So these are values. Computation are just values, and you might want to actually run them. Just to avoid being threatened, this is not the official definition of monad. There are only those three things included in the official definition, and also other constraints so that bind works well with other things, with return. And so I'm presenting it just as a design pattern. Let's do an example. Here we have some pseudocode, and this is how you will represent them. Just also some small sanity check. We have the semicolon, which is bind, and we have the value on which we return, which is in the function argument. When you do longer computations, such as reading two lines and then printing the concatenation of both, on the right it starts to become unreadable. Here we have the two binds, which are the two semicolon, but the left is more readable than the right. And so in order to fix this, the OCaml language gave syntactic support for monad. Just like you can redefine the plus operators, for instance, let plus equal my own plus, you can redefine the let operator, let etoile equal my own bind function. So here, if you define let star to be bind, those two things are equivalent. The right one is just a syntactic sugar for the other. And again, a sanity check. Everything, like we have exactly the same number of ingredients on the right and on the left. And using this syntactic cigar, the thing on the bottom here looks much, much more the same as the pseudocode that we had. So that is good. We now know what is a monad, sorry. And let's go back to our big picture. So we wanted to know how to go back in Slipshow. We said, oh, we just have an undo stack and pop the undo stack. But for that, we needed to have functions that return their undo function. And we thought maybe monad will be useful because they represent computation at the value level. So we can add some specific things to the computation. And in order to define a monad, we can just follow this design pattern. And by providing those ingredients, we will define a monad. So let's do that. We have those four ingredients, and I'm going to start right away with the type. So a computation here will be just the result. We are not, okay. We are not remembering the. We are not remembering the computation itself, only its result, but we are also remembering a way to undo the side effects. So two things, a record with the result and the undo function. Now, I said we need entry point computation. My example here is setting, oh, there is a mistake. It's not setting a class, it's setting a reference. Reference are mutable values. In OCaml, I could say setting a pointer. So you have a X here, which is a reference, a mutable value, and a new value. And you want to assign the new value to X. So the computation looks like this, set ref. The result will be X has been set to the new value. And it will be also that you have an undo function to undo the change. How to define the undo function here? It's relatively obvious in English. You just set it back to the value it had before. So let's set it back to the value it had before, which is oldval. But what is oldval? It's at the, we need to be careful to put it outside the closure. So here we store the old value outside of the closure before we set it. And then we return a function that set it back to the old value. So the information has been put in the closure of the function. Okay. We have many more atomic things like setting a class to an HTML element, setting its style, popping a stack. I have several data structures that are mutable and that return their undo function. And now we need to chain computation because we have all those atomic values and we want to chain them into a proper computations, which looks like this. And so we will have a computation one, which produce an X and an undo function. And we will have a computation two, which is dependent on the execution of computation one. But it will, given X, produce a result and another undo function. So what is bind, the chaining of computation one and the function that will give computation two given X? So we have two things to set, the result and the undo function. The result is relatively straightforward. We just get the result of the second computation when applied to the result of the first computation. So I don't know if it's readable, but it's easy in principle. And the undo function is also easy in principle, which is you want to undo both things. So you undo first the last one and then the first one. So you have to make sure to first undo comp 2 and then undo comp 1. And that's it. We have our type, atomic values and way to change them. And so we can just use them to define computations that return their their undo values. So here I have a reference which is given, which is zero at the beginning. So here is the pseudocode for it. You say x to x plus one, set x to x plus one, and then return x, which really looks like what we have defined in test. And so we start with x being zero. When we do the computation, x is two. But now we have test.undo that undoes the side effect. And when we call it, we get back x being zero. And which is very nice because here we really see only the forward version of the computation. If we remove the let star, it really looks like it's a normal OCaml code. But actually, this code is generating an undo function that you can call to undo the side effects. Cool. So let's see it in a real world example. In Slipshow, so this is just some code that I took from Slipshow. There are many more where it's used, maybe more spread. So we can see that there are specific let star, which for some reason is let another symbol here, which is the way to change the computation. So for instance, you first do the action.exit computation, which might return an undo, and you change that with another attribute action.do, which also does side effects that you may want to undo. There is this data structure, undoable.stack, which is a mutable stack that returns its undo things. So you have a way to change them. You also have the undoable.return that is part of the monad thing. You have many atomic or non-atomic, but things that you chain that were a result of chaining, so other computation, as I already told. So in the definition of action, I use a lot this monad, which allows me to write things just like if I were only writing the forward version, and I get for free the backward version. Very small going further part. So the type is actually slightly more complex. So there are several different ways to make it more real life. So first, you could say that we don't want to, we want the side effects and the undo chaining to be forced to be coherent, consistent. And the fact that the way we were doing things, we could shoot ourselves in the foot. But if you use an IO monad, which is a, like side effect monad, you can avoid that. Also, action return promises, they are asynchronous. And so you also need a monad to have it asynchronous. So in real life, it's slightly more complex, but the idea is really the same. And the last thing is that I mentioned that I allow users to define their own scripts, so they can do more complex things, or like animation in their presentations. And the way focusing on a transition worked quite well with that. So I provide an API for that people can use. So for instance, you can call slip.reveal on all the elements with class C, and this will store all the undo functions that have been generated by slip.reveal. Since I introduced the monad, I never felt limited by the technical choices, and so I think it proves that it was right. This is another example, like if you want to start animations and not use the API, for instance, you use an external library, 3.js, you can provide your own undo for the side effect that you have made. And that is everything. I think I was late, but actually it seems good. So thank you very much.
Excellent, thank you. So, more time for questions.
Right. Thank you very much for a very good talk. It was very impressive as well. It's very impressive demonstration. I did have a question. When you combine undo with bind, you get the global undo function, the one that takes you back to the beginning of the slide deck. How do you do the atomic one where you go from the current slide to the slide just before?
Yeah, so...
And how do you speed up when you go... Like, you get to go to 72 right now. That speeds everything up. That doesn't run for everything, so surely you must have another way of going forward.
So you say it again, the last one?
I basically have a question about atomic undo, because
yeah.
You combine them for bind.
So yeah, maybe I start with that.
Yes.
So atomic undo is you just, like, there are parts where I combine the undo functions, and sometimes I even replace them, so I can say, this computation I want to do it slightly differently when I come back, so I unpack the record and I modify the undo function in the record. So I can use the left star when I want, but I also can inspect the value at
right.
some point and modify it. And here the next function is the part where I always extract the record, and so I call the next function will do a lot of chaining, and at the end get a value that is a record, discard or send to the, like, use the value it has got, but also take the undo and put it in the stack. So next does not chain, it extracts the value and the undo function and put it in the stack, this.
Okay.
And so the second one?
Oh, it's sort of vaguely related.
Okay.
Only. It's just when you go to that nifty thing on the left where you show all the slides and you click on one, that clearly shows that you have another way of going, of calling next, right? Because you don't run all the animations. When you go straight from slide 0 to 72, for example, you don't pose every time, for example.
So I have different modes of running, and so action can inspect which mode. Is it fast mode? Is it counting for the table of content? And you also, so if you go here, you can see it's 63 to 64, and if I press, if I press twice, I have a way to interrupt the computation to go directly to the end of the computation.
Understood. Cool.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you very much. It was very impressive to see so beautiful software written in Archimedes. I have a question related to the undo function for the return function. So let's imagine that I make return 10.
Yeah.
It will generate the function from unit to unit.
Yeah.
Is that a step or not? So let's imagine that I put return 42. There a step that just do, I take unit, I return unit? Or it will collapse with the previous undo function?
It will not collapse. So I when I made it, I thought at some point I will need to optimize to not have like this stack of closure in, each time I change something. So I thought I will do that later. I will start with this because I think it's satisfying because it's really simple. And I never had a problem, like even in a 170 thing, it's never too long to go, like it's not a problem.
Nice, thank you very much.
Yes?
So the front end, you've got your computation stack and you can control the sequencing of the computation going back and forth. Is the front end here, all of the side effects are on the document of object model of an HTML page?
Yeah.
And you could plug in different front ends for something like Slipshow, like it could drive a terminal interface or something with not too much change?
So the it's quite heavily relying on the HTML thing and the engine part of it. So if I go back here, I said, for instance, that the ordering of the action is made by the compiler. Actually, it's more made like the compiler has a role to issue warnings,
make it self-contained and do some analysis, but most of the work is done by engine, so making it in a terminal will be quite a lot of work to redo to, yeah. So, yeah, mostly it's purely possible to take the same approach and make another front-end, but still a bit of. Yes?
What are the actions for drawing and animating
a drawing? Sorry, I didn't hear.
What are the actions for animating a drawing actually look like?
So, it's... I can show... So, the drawings are made inside the presentation. And I don't know, this one should be compiling. And so you have a UI to you can record, and it generates a timeline of your drawing, and then you can edit it. So for instance, those are erasers, these are poses in the drawing, these are black stroke, blue stroke, and you can then you have tools. So for instance, you can select things. You can select all the tools work both in the timeline and in the preview, and you can move them. Sorry.
You should go talk on that as well.
Yes.
And you can also move here. You can rescale in that and rescale in time. So.
Maybe you focus on the wrong part. The other one I just rebooted, so that is way cooler.
Yeah. This is relatively new, and I will do other tools too.
This is too trivial to show. That's a problem.
Yeah, and so currently the UX is not great. I mean, it's really working quite well, but I have many ideas for improvement on the drawing part.
It's quite good already.
Yeah. You can really do cool things, and it's I'm very happy with it. When you develop a new feature, you never know when it's not present in other software. You never know if it will be useful or not, and this has been a really nice surprise.
Is there maybe a slot for a third tutorial today?
You are booked for next year, so you have to come back for next year for that. Yeah, to be continued. Thank you, Paul Elliott. Great.